Hello and welcome to the Mother's Empowerment Podcast. I'm your host, Isabel Bridges, and here on this show, we dive deep into all things mothering, sistering, and humaning. Because the roles that you play are something you learned, not who you are. Let's begin. You guys are going to love this episode. Oh my goodness. I talked to my friend and dear mentor, Lisa Nichols, who used to be a journalist and a mortgage banker. And she was really successful in that life, externally, but she was unhappy internally. And if you can relate to this, then you're really going to want to lean in. She shares a lot of resources and tools that helped her become a more empowered person. Listen in and take notes as you commit to your own inner work. Let's begin. Hi, and welcome back to the Mother's Empowerment Podcast. Today is a really special day for me. We're meeting with Lisa Nichols, a transformation coach for women in business. And I am in my own transformational process. We always are in transformation, right? But I am really on the precipice of something big. And so I'm really eager to lean into this work with you, Lisa, both for personal reasons, as well as just I'm feeling a lot of transformation happening in the collective, both a little alarming and then also like really empowering, which is obviously a big part of what I'm about. So we'll talk more about that. Before we do, I would love for you to introduce yourself to our listeners.
Great, Isabel. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it, of course. I always loved connecting with you and your energy. So thank you very much. So I started out my career as a journalist. I actually have a master's degree in agricultural journalism. And then I went into the banking world and did project management, business analysis, corporate communications, et cetera. And I rose to become a vice president at a very large bank. And then I went on to other mortgage companies because I worked in the mortgage side and was a vice president at another bank. And I think I was the first person in my mom's family to ever make over $100,000 a year. And first person in my mom's family to get a college degree, let alone a master's degree. Mm-hmm. And it sounds so, you know, like pretty successful. And yet I was all drama inside. It was so unhappy inside. I was, I didn't know it, but I had social anxiety. I was angry a lot. In fact, for a while, I said the only two emotions I felt were anger and love for my children. And the anger spilled over onto my children, of course, right? So finally, in the early 2000s, I kind of started my personal growth and personal healing journey. And here I am today. I'm an EFT tapping practitioner, a Reiki master. I love doing tarot readings and feel just like a completely different person. I'm no longer the successful looking on the outside, you know, with the high income job and the nice car and the nice house and the 2.4 children. But a mess inside, unhappy on the inside. Mm-hmm. And to, you know, I'm no longer that person. And it feels wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I will be asking you more about that transformation, how you kind of transitioned from the importance of what it looks like to the importance of what it feels like. But before we go there, what does empowerment mean to you?
To me, it is feeling that calmness within, that ability to do what we want, not what our feelings are telling us to do, not what other people think we should do, not what society thinks we should do, but just that feeling of standing in our own strength and knowing we're not perfect. Like you said, we're always going to be on our transformation journey, But feeling like we've gotten to a place where we feel like ourselves, we're no longer kind of covered over with all these layers of what I call paper cut traumas, and beliefs and thoughts of patterns that we created when we were a child, when we were trying to survive, and we use them as coping mechanisms, but that unknowingly we brought into our adulthood. And when we can, you know, we have a reaction to something and we can literally look at that, go, oh, look at that. I'm feeling like I don't belong. Oh, I'm feeling like someone misunderstood me. Oh, I'm feeling like I'm incompetent, like I'm uncomfortable. What do I want to do about that? And then make a different decision than the action that we would normally take out of those feelings.
Yeah. If only we had access to that part more often. If only I had access to that part more often. Yeah. So, okay. Thank you for that. So we're going to move into the transformation conversation, which you've already sort of done. Like for some of us, including myself, those can feel so far apart. Like the person that I am on the inside and the person I want to appear to be are not the same. And they feel very, well, yeah, I'll speak for a past version of me. I wanted to be seen as like a good mom. That was like high on my list. A good wife, like all the roles. I wanted to be seen as like good, like virtuous, you know, in a way, selfless. And I wanted to look good doing it. And on the inside, I was so filled with anxiety and almost like a feeling of panic because I was afraid that I would be found out and that people would not want me or love me anymore. And I'm speaking again for like our collective listeners. If you can relate to this, you know, you can let me know. You can email both Lisa and I or find us on all the stuff to let us know that if you relate to this. So then, Lisa, can you help that last part of me, that last version of me, kind of move towards it, towards this transformation into feeling more empowered?
Yes, a lot of feeling, wanting to be seen a certain way, but feeling on the inside like you could never attain that, or that people are going to know that you can't do it, is a fear of judgment. And fear of judgment, and which is all wrapped up with fear of criticism and fear of failure somewhat, but fear of judgment especially. And I really know this feeling because that's what social anxiety is. It's an extreme fear of judgment. And fear of judgment is, it happens when things, you know, like I was talking about the paper cut traumas, you know, there are the big T traumas, the accidents, the big accidents, the abuse, the violence, things that happen to us that are big traumas. But where a lot of our beliefs around ourselves come from are these like little paper cut traumas. There are things like if you're, and I saw this happen in my daughter's first grade class one time when I was volunteering, where the teacher was walking around watching the children do their work. And she stopped at this little girl's first grade, get it, six years old. She stopped at this little girl's desk and she picks up the paper and she holds it up and she says, "Do you see this, class? This is how I told you not to do it." So right there, that's a wound that that little girl will probably always carry. And so depending on what meaning she gives this event is how she's probably going to act out a lot of her life from then on. Like she could have thought, "I'm incompetent." Most likely it was like, "Geez, I better not be seen very much. I better stay invisible." Or, you know, there's any number of things that we could, that she could have created as a, what that event means. I'll give you from my own, an example from my own life, which is when I was about 12 years old, I was sweeping my grandmother's floor. My grandmother lived on a farm, so it was dusty and everything. my mom was sitting at the kitchen table and she looks down at the pile of dirt and she goes, "Is that all you got? I could have gotten twice that." And I don't think my mom would ever think of that ever again. But for me, it really cut deep. It really made me feel incompetent, like I never do anything right, that I will never do anything right. And I would, whenever I talked or thought about that event from then on, I would cry for decades. I would cry over this one little incident in my life. And so what happens then is our brain, our amygdala starts seeing situations where they want to protect us from that pain. It wants to protect us from feeling that way again. And so it starts looking for instances in our lives that will reinforce this belief, like I'm incompetent. And so even situations that we start seeing even situations that are neutral, we start seeing them from that light and it reinforces that feeling within us. So the way you get out of it is you acknowledge it, you find out, you know, okay, that's a fear that I have. And you talk about it, which is so helpful because when you bring something out into the light, it breaks its power. It doesn't have the same power as when you say it in your head over and over and over again. And sometimes even you say it out loud and you're like, really? That's what I believe? That's kind of silly. Or I can't believe I believe that. I've had people say that when we've been doing EFT tapping. I've had people say, man, as soon as I said it out loud, I was like, really? I don't want to believe that anymore. And then there are just so many different ways of working with these underlying beliefs and shifting them into something that's more empowering. It was funny that once I had been working on myself for a long time, and it was only a year or so ago that I figured out I had this social anxiety. And it was like, as soon as I could finally name it and say it and see what it was, I think I was able to work through probably 90% of it. Mm-hmm. Not that it's gone away completely. I still get some anxiety in group situations, you know, that kind of thing. But so much of it went away. Part of the social anxiety is dissociation of like not being in your body. And I don't dissociate anymore. So, okay, back to your original question. Where do you go from, you know, being anxious and wanting to be seen as a good mom and a good mother, wife and all of that to feeling like I know I am and I don't care what other people think about me? How do you do that? You know, and it's just, It does take the work. It takes being willing to look within and figuring out what is the kind of thought, feeling, action process that you go through and being able to disrupt that. Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes so much sense. And how can we build habits around this type of inner work?
I'm not a journaler, but I know a lot of people get a lot of help from journaling. So there's just so many ways to do it. And journaling can help some people because, again, you're writing down like what is on the inside. But then if you go back and you read it, you're like, really, that's what I think. Mm-hmm. Okay. So journaling, of course, and I just saw somebody speak about journaling and she goes, I know. It sounds horrible. It's, you know, I don't want to journal, but it's one of those things that if you can build a habit of it, it really can shift by just putting things down, by thinking things through, and especially the artist's way type journaling where you just
morning pages,
you just do your morning pages. You just get that out, you know, you let it out. I would also say women's circles, being around other women where you can, especially mom's groups. Oh my gosh, mom's groups are so helpful because when you're a new mom, especially, and you have no idea what you're doing and everything seems like, oh, you must be doing this wrong because your kid acts weird or your kid does these things. And you're like, why? Why are they doing this? Must be I'm a bad mom. I remember I was in a parents and children in the evening class when my daughter was like 2 and 3. And the first time I saw other people, I didn't have friends with kids. And so the first time I saw other people's kids doing these weird things, I'm like, oh my God, thank God it's not just me. It's so helpful. And that's why I think other women's groups, so helpful, because you can go, do you feel like you're feeling too? And other, yes, you know, no, it's not just you. And therefore it's not you. Anything to help you see the situation from a different perspective or a different idea. Because when we're in our rut, it just feels so normal. It just feels like this is just truth. This is just the way things are. And so anytime you can take yourself out of what you normally do and how you normally see things and be able to get a different perspective of it, it will help to break that feeling action sequence. Gosh, there are so many other ways. Like, I, of course, love EFT tapping. And my own journey, I was talked about a little bit. So I started it in the early 2000s. And I must be a really slow learner because it took me forever. And I did this and I did that and I did this. I did some therapy that included EMDR. I was very, very involved in a spiritual community where we had a women's group. We had, Reiki, lots of Reiki. We did all these different things. And yet in 2018, when I took my EFT tapping practitioner certification, things just have gone exponential for me since then. Everything's changed since then. And tapping is a big part of it that allowed me to see opportunities in a way that I wouldn't have been able to see before. That's one of the great things about doing your work. Yeah. When you're like enclosed in your like little circle of, I don't feel good enough, I'm anxious, all of this, it's hard to see the possibilities and the opportunities that are right in front of you. Mm-hmm. And so when you do that work, it just increases exponentially. So of course I believe in EFT tapping, but there's lots of other ways too.
Let's take a small break here and go on over to isabelbridges.com/membership and check it out. This month's theme is going to be so useful. We are going to be talking about habits, what creates a habit, what makes creating a habit difficult, and you'll be choosing one specific habit to install this month while you get all the support that you desire and deserve. Check it out at isabelbridges.com/membership. Back to the show.
I just want to have a little plug here for my membership, the Mother's Empowerment Sisterhood, where we do our inner work, but then we also are explicit about what's happening for us on the inside. So just like what you talked about, seeing other children do things gives you a sense of comfort of my child's not the only weird one out there. We also can feel that way about ourselves. So when we create a lot of vulnerability around this type of thing, around our anxiety, around our insecurities, and when we hear other people name them, it gives us permission to say, okay, I'm okay. And our theme in April is all about habits. And so we're going to state and claim a habit that we're going to install over the month. So dear listeners, if you want to come in and stake your claim on one habit, whether that's journaling or EFT or any other of these tools that Lisa has mentioned, then we welcome you. Tell us some of your other tools. You said morning pages, Reiki. What are some of the other tools that you love to work with?
Well, I do love tarot. Yeah. And I know, you know, tarot can, like, a lot of people don't really know tarot, or they have the impression that it's kind of a divination process, you know. And what I see tarot as is something that helps us find ourselves. It provides insight and clarity and validation. And I often, several times I've had people cry doing a tarot reading because they don't have a lot of places in their lives where they feel heard or seen. And tarot can really help. Like one woman, the card that she got, that was at it like a fair. And so it was just one card reading. No. She was a three card reading. Now that I think about it, right away, it was about grief. And she started to cry because one of her best friends had died like 9 months before. And that she didn't have anyone to talk to about it. And it was the first time she was able to cry because she just didn't have the words for it. She didn't even realize she was grieving. And so tarot can really help us see those things that are unconscious within us and bring them conscious, bring them to the light, and or help us go, you know what, I knew that. I just, sometimes we deny our own knowing. And, or we think, oh, that can't be true. Or, oh, I shouldn't think that. Or, you know, that's not what a good girl does. There's any number of ways that we deny our own inner knowing. And tarot, a lot of times, it's just, I think it's a lovely way to help us bring things to the light that we need to know and we need to see. And it's not divination because we always have free will. If we see something coming up in our lives that we're like, oh, I don't really want that, or I don't want to feel that way, whatever it is, we get to choose differently. And I think bringing things to light like that helps us have the, like you said, permission to choose differently. And it, you know, some of the tarot cards can feel scary, like the Death card or the Tower card or something, but it's all just information. And it's like, death is not physical death. It is the death to something in our lives that no longer serves us, so that we can be open to having something new come into our lives that better serves us. That's the Death card. And it's just, tarot can be very enlightening. And I love doing tarot. And Reiki, you mentioned Reiki. And what I love about Reiki is it seems, it can seem benign. Like you're just laying on a table and someone's putting their hands on you, you know. But what it's doing is it's working with the energy systems in your body. And we have many energy systems in our body, like even brainwaves. That's energy. Mm-hmm. And what it's doing is it's helping to align and connect the flow of all the energy in your body. And it can get you into a deep state of relaxation. It can trigger your inner immune response, your inner healing ability. It can help with pain and high blood pressure and all this stuff. But what I love about it is it calms your nervous system. It helps your jingly nerves. And I think Reiki, especially now, because people are still feeling the after effects of the pandemic, I don't think a lot of people have been able to get back into feeling a state of calm within their bodies. I think they're still going like this on the inside, you know, jingly. Yeah. I think Reiki can reset that. Mm-hmm. And when your nervous system isn't on high alert all the time, then you see possibilities again, you see solutions that otherwise might not be available to you. I also think for kids, I think Reiki is a really great idea. Mm. If you have, you know, especially a child who maybe is going through something at school, you know, they just haven't been able to like find their place or something, but it just brings them into their bodies. It resets their nervous system. It just gets them, just kind of free having to deal with the world.
That's so beautiful. I'm going to really consider Reiki for one of my kiddos, if not both of them, if not all of us. I think we can all use some of that nervous system regulation.
Yeah.
We're slowly moving towards the end of our time together. Lisa, is there anything else you want to make sure that you say before we close?
Well, a lot of what we think is normal for us are coping mechanisms that we developed when we were children. Yeah, and they feel normal to us because we developed these these processes or these beliefs, these thought patterns, these emotional triggers, kind of pre-consciousness. When I work with my clients in EFT tapping, it's usually between ages 3 and 5 when these traumatic experiences happen that we create a belief around, or 12 and 13, those are also big years. And so a lot of times what we think is normal or just who we are is not. And I'll just use procrastination as an easy example. Mm-hmm. We are not born procrastinators. Some people have lower energy, maybe a slower pace, yes. But procrastination is a coping mechanism that we developed for whatever reason, like fear of judgment earlier. A lot of people with fear of judgment will procrastinate because they don't want to put themselves out there because they know they're going to be judged. Mm. Or if you had a highly controlling parent and you didn't have a lot of autonomy as a child, maybe you procrastinate because you're kind of always giving them the finger, like, I'll do it when I want to do it. You know, it's a little bit of a rebellion in there, which is okay when you're 8 or 14, but not so great when you're 40 and you're still procrastinating, even when you know it's for your best, in your best interest to do something, and you're still like, you know, I can't do it. I'm not going to do it. So there's different reasons for procrastination. There's different reasons for perfectionism. There's, you know, all these things that we think are just who we are. There's probably some underlying event and belief system, a belief that we created either about ourselves or about how the world works. Mm. So, you know, we could have a belief about ourselves, like, I'm not lovable or I'm not worthy. Or we could have a belief about the world, which, you know, is something like, only men make a lot of money. Yeah. Or that, you know, it's unconscious, but we still believe it. Yeah. So there's just, and so I think that if there is a way that you feel or a way that you're interacting in the world, that is not like, you know, it's not in your best interest and it's not really truly who you are. Like you, I remember when I was a big procrastinator, I would be so frustrated with myself. Mm-hmm. I'm like, just get off the damn couch and go and do it, you know? And I couldn't. And I didn't understand why. I finally figured out why. And now I don't really procrastinate. I see things that I don't want to do, and maybe I don't do them, but it's like, it's a conscious choice. So I just think that everyone can find a tool or tools or a method, some way of helping them get back to their own inner knowing and that, in a sense of calm and peace. And personally, I wish I'd done my work on my children before my children were born or when they were much younger. What a difference the lives of my children would have been. Mm-hmm. If I could have not acted out of anger all the time, out of frustration, out of fear of judgment, et cetera. You know, so much of my parenting was around that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I did it when I did it. Yeah. You know, my daughter has told me, Mom, it's so, you know, I've apologized to her for certain things. And she's like, Mom, it's okay. You're changing things now. You've made it. You've changed now, and it's changing the rest of us. And so they see it. They see the work that we do and they feel it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we are role modeling it for them. When it's hard and we still do it, we're role modeling that they can do that too. And that absolutely. It's okay that it's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I absolutely love your group, your membership.
Mm.
What I wouldn't have given to have some sort of resource like that when my children are little.
Same. We give what we need, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So my last question is, I want to take a breath here because I'm just intuiting that this response is going to be for me. What is the next empowering action you'd like to invite our listeners to take?
It is committing to yourself that no matter how selfish it may seem, how expensive it might seem, how you don't have the time for it, whatever justification or excuse, that might come up for you that you commit to doing your own work and finding the way that works for you. Not everything works for everyone. I know someone who says EFT tapping doesn't work for her and hypnotism does. Mm-hmm. Hypnotism doesn't work for me. EFT tapping works for me. So be willing to try out different things until you find one that really helps uncover who you really are.
Yeah.
As my business called tapping into your true self. Mm-hmm. And then know, you know, like it's a process. And so one tool or one resource will help now, and it's leading you to the next one. And it is a process. Mm-hmm. And it can be painful, and it is so worth it. It is. I remember at one point I was doing a lot of work, and I was like, okay, I worked through something, and then I was like, okay, bring on the next one, do it, you know, just because it was so exciting. It was such a relief to be letting go of these things. And even though it was hard, you know, it can be hard. It can also be exhilarating and motivational and transformative.
Yes. Okay. I agree to take on that invitation. Thank you so much. And just a reminder, you can join the Mother's Empowerment Sisterhood for a month, totally free. So this month would be a really wonderful month to come get that accountability. And I can't wait to work with you more, Lisa, and deepen into my own inner work in this way. So thank you so much. All the places you can find Lisa will be in the show notes. So I also would love you to just check in with her and let her know what you got from this conversation. Tag her when you experiment with the tools that she mentioned here. Okay. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Lisa. Bye. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Mother's Empowerment Podcast. That's all for today, my friends. And here's what I want you to remember. Empowerment is an inside job. The only one who can empower you is you. Today's episode was produced by Brendan Lindsay. Intro and outro music are by Matthew Randolph. I'm Isabel Bridges, author of Daddy Daughter Day. I'm also the founder of the Mother's Empowerment Sisterhood. You can learn more about my work and join the sisterhood at isabelbridges.com. And psst, I'm offering a 50% off discount for a limited time only. So check it out today, isabelbridges.com.